I'm glad to be with you again this evening and to have some time to explore together. Tonight I wanted to just start by sharing with you that my dear friend, mentor and teacher Stephen Levine died just a few weeks ago, and I miss him terribly. It's been I've had a great sense of loss, but also a great sense of completion. Both things are so. You know, there's an old story in the Jataka tales, old Buddhist story, about a family that is the model for love and harmony in their village. And suddenly one day, their oldest son dies. And the villagers, expecting to find a family devastated, go to their home to console them in their bereavement. But when they arrive at the house, they find the family to be quite happy and going about their business. And they're a little surprised by this. And so they ask the family, well, why is this so? And the family said, well, the secret to our happiness was recognizing that one day we would part. And so we didn't know when that day would be. It was always uncertain. And so we cared for each other with great love, knowing that it could happen at any moment. And so when at last his death did come, we were prepared. And this is this old Jataka tale, this old Buddhist tale. It's a beautiful tale. But in a way, I feel that with Stephen. We talked a lot about it at different times in his life, one or the other of us dying. And we had a great sense of appreciation for each other, knowing that that would indeed come. And I shared with some of you that I went to see him about a year and a half, 2 years ago now. He lived way up high on about 9,000 feet outside of Taos, New Mexico, in an old ramshackle house attached to a trailer, something like you might, like one of your friends probably live in, there in Sandpoint. And Stephen was for those of you who don't know him, he was a remarkable Buddhist teacher. He was a remarkable fellow who changed the whole way in which we deal with death and dying. And in this way, he was my mentor and a dear friend. And so I went up to see Stephen this time, and he didn't ever accept visitors. So I was quite surprised when I wrote him and suggested that I make a visit. And he was very enthusiastic. And so I went to see him, and I pulled up to the I met Andrea, his wife, at the post office in Chamisol. The post office was a temporary building, like an extra wide trailer. And Andrea pulled up with a truck that had tires almost as tall as me. And I hopped in the truck and we drove up some semblance of a road, really more of a rugged path to their house. And there I spent the day with my good friend and teacher. And Stephen, while he had always had an important role in my life, he was, I had never acknowledged him as a teacher. I was shy about that. I was always shy about teachers. And so I wanted to thank him and to acknowledge to him that he had been a brilliant and important a teacher in my life. And so we spent the day together sharing stories. And he'd say, well, tell me a story about being with people who are dying. And I would tell him a story, and he would just cry. He would just cry. And I'd reach out, and I'd put my hand on his chest, and he'd put his hand on my chest. And we'd sit there in silence for a while. And then I'd say, okay, you tell me a story. And then he'd tell me a story, and I would cry. And we would do the same gesture again. And it went on like this all day long, all day long. We would just swap stories and then laugh and cry together a lot. And it crying wasn't so much that around the sadness, although there was sadness, it was more about the beauty and the sense of gratitude that we had, that our lives had been so blessed to be with these people at such vulnerable moments in their lives. And I felt that blessing that day being with him. When I was starting out, I used to borrow Stephen's words. And even I talked a little bit like him. And students do that with their teachers. They borrow their voice until they can find their own. And I did that with Stephen. And I thanked him for it that day. I said to him, you know, I hope I wasn't too much of an embarrassment for you. You know. And he said something beautiful to me. He said, well, he said, now the student has passed the teacher. And it was a very generous comment on his part. And I said, well, then now we can just be friends. and so we were. We had a wonderful day and reminisced, and Stephen pulled out some of his favorite poems and read them, and I recited a few to him, and the day ended, and dusk was coming, and so Andrea was going to drive me down the hill, and I climbed up back into this truck and closed the door. Stephen was waving goodbye, and I said to Andrea, wait, and I got out of the truck, and I went back to my teacher, and I bowed down to the ground. Full prostrations, offering him my deepest love and respect. And then I stood and we hugged, and I drove off, and that was the last time I saw him. So we're like that tale I told you. We knew one day we would part. And I knew this last year it was coming close. And so we wrote back and forth, but not too much. Now, Stephen was a rebel. He was amazingly intuitive. He was steeped in a number of traditions, but not wedded to any one. No one authorized him to teach. But he found a way of drawing on the wisdom and compassion of a number of different traditions without succumbing to the dogma of any one way. And I loved him for that. And he was a great model for me. He wasn't really interested in looking good, Stephen. He was never interested in looking good. He often wore funky and stained clothes. His teeth were yellow. He liked to smoke hand-rolled cigarettes right in the middle of a Buddhist meditation retreat. He laughed sometimes seemingly inappropriately at the way we got entangled in our suffering. And he had a huge compassionate heart. Sometimes he would play with me. Once he was teaching a very big retreat for about 800 people, and he asked me to come up on the stage and to speak a little bit about my work at Zen Hospice at the time. And prior to my speaking, he introduced me, and he gave me a very, very elaborate and generous introduction, saying all kinds of wonderful things about me. And then just before he gave me the microphone, he leaned over and he said, "See what that does to your head." Yeah. At another time, we were at the very beginning. Whenever Stephen would come to town, he would call, and often he was a big supporter of Zen Hospice, and sometimes he would come and speak to our volunteers. And this one time, we were out at Green Gulch Farm, and speaking. This was Stephen and 18 volunteers, and so it was very intimate. And also in the room were a number of people who were patients in the hospice at the time. This was near the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. And Stephen was tired. And he'd been traveling and teaching a lot, and he was tired. And he sat down in front of this very small group, which was very generous of him to do. And he did his shtick a little bit. You know, he was doing his thing, which teachers will do, myself included. And kind of using his old routines. And a man called him on it. A man who was dying called him on it and said, you know, you're just giving me cliches. I'm about to die. I need something other than cliches. And Stephen came back and tried to respond to him, but he was a little tired. And the man shunned him, really, you know, told him off. And I sort of intervened at that point and listened to this man who was very upset. And then this man, after about a little while of that, he turned to Stephen and he said, you should learn to listen like him. And it was hard for me. It was hard for me with my teacher. So I saw all sides of him, and he was gracious to show me that. I was very, very happy, very grateful that he showed me that. I think some of you had some encounters with him, maybe saw him or attended a program with him or listened to his tapes or something like that. So you know the uniqueness of his teaching, how he was fearless, how people would tell him all kinds of things. I remember speaking one time at one of his workshops about my newly born son. This was 34 years ago. And the beauty of being with him and how I could kiss the future into my son's cheeks. And the beauty of the softness of his eyelashes. And how is this possible to love a being so much without ever knowing them, really? A brand new infant, my brand new son. And how could it be otherwise? How could it be otherwise? And Stephen thanked me and I sat down. And the next woman to stand up was Carolyn. I remember Carolyn. And she stood up and she said, I appreciated that. When I was born, my mother threw me in a dumpster and walked away. Yeah. What was remarkable about Stephen is that he met us both with equanimity, both the joy and the love and happiness that was part of my sharing, and also the horror and the ugliness and the suffering that was characterized Carolyn's sharing. Yeah. He met them both with equanimity. Yeah. It wasn't that he was unmoved by them. He was very moved by both. And he allowed them both to touch his heart. The great happiness of this world and the great suffering of this world. 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. My friend Martha, who I started Zen Hospice with, she sent me an email today and she said, how you doing with Stephen? She just thought about me and how you doing? And she sent me one of his poems. I thought I'd read it to you. It's called The Millennium Blessing. Millennium Blessing. And he writes, there is a grace approaching that we shun as much as death. It is the completion of our birth. It does not come in time, but in timelessness. When the mind sinks into the heart and we remember. It is an insistent grace that draws us to the edge and beckons us to surrender, surrender safe territory and enter our enormity. We know we must pass beyond knowing and fear the shedding. But we are pulled upward nonetheless through forgotten ghosts and unexpected angels, luminous, and there is nothing left to say but that we are that. And that is what we sing about. That's Stephen's poem, Millennium Blessing. Beautiful poem about being, you know, this being pulled past the limiting stories we have about ourselves, the small, cramped self we've taken ourselves to be. To surrender the safe territory and enter our enormity. There's another few poems. I've read you one or two of them before, but I thought they merit reading again. Stephen really always, his teaching was really always about love. He said, "We walk through half our life as if in a fever dream, barely touching the ground. Our eyes half open, our hearts half closed. Not half knowing who we are, we watch the ghost of us drift from room to room, through friends and lovers, never quite as real as advertised. Not saying half of what we mean, or meaning half of what we say. We dream ourselves from birth to birth, seeking some true self. Until the fever breaks, and the heart cannot abide a moment longer, as the rest of us awakens, summoned from the dream, not half caring for anything but love." I love this dear man, and I am so grateful for his life, and I couldn't have asked him to stay one more day. Rarely do we meet people in our lives who live their life with such integrity, with such commitment, so fully stepping into life. Yeah. And Stephen was such a man. And he would not like to be praised too much. It wasn't his way. But I couldn't be with you without sharing with you the deep sadness and love and gratitude that I feel for him and in this time right now, yeah. As I mark his loss, yeah. We had a fiery relationship. When I was very young, I don't think I've shared this with all of you, but some of you maybe. I'm in a vulnerable moment, so sharing seems possible. When I was very young, a teenager, I was very badly sexually abused, terribly sexually abused by the priest in my church who I adored and had great confidence in, and this was a horrible thing that went on for years, and it damaged me and hurt me as it has many other people. And in my confusion of those wounds, I conflated pedophilia and sexual abuse and homosexuality. I conflated them all, and of course, that's not accurate. But in my wounded teenage world, it was. Yeah. And this was a wound I carried for many years, and I didn't trust teachers, and I didn't trust religious traditions anymore at all. Until Stephen. And Stephen was the first one I began to trust. Because he didn't give me any reason to not trust him. And once I took the liberty of sharing this with him in much greater detail than I did with you. And he listened with great generosity. And as was his way, he followed his intuition. And this was way back when, in the late 70s. And he said to me, I think you should go work with people with AIDS. And this was when the epidemic was just beginning, was only at that point affecting people in the gay community. And this old wound was there, and this conflation was there, and I literally grabbed my teacher by the throat. I grabbed him by the scuff of his shirt, and I pressed him back against the wall, and I said, how could you even say that? How would you dare say that to me? You want to send me back into hell. You know, and this was... this was the kind of honest relationship I had with Stephen. And, and there he was, you know, pressed against this wall, and me feeling very angry. And of course, this was all the anger that had been suppressed for all those years. And as soon as it came out of my mouth, I knew it was wrong. Not that I was saying that to Stephen, that I knew he was right. I knew that he was telling me exactly what I needed to do. Was where the healing would be found. And so, you know, I said yes, and the next week I signed up to be a home health aide, working with people with AIDS from midnight to 8 a.m. And I did that for some time before I started Zen Hospice. In the dark hours of the night, you know, when it's lonely and people didn't know what to do. So Stephen set me on my way and showed me how to heal what I thought was unhealable. And there was this part of me that kept expecting that this would be healed by love coming to me from somewhere outside me. And Stephen showed me that it would be healed by love coming through me. That love would be my mentor. Yeah. And he gave me confidence in that. And so we were very close, and we stayed very good. Even when we wouldn't see each other for sometimes long times, even years, our love stayed steady. And I am ever grateful to him. And so much of what I've learned and what I've tried to share with you really comes through him. And so you should, you shouldn't do anything. But I wanted you to know that. I wanted you to know that. Yeah. Here's the last poem by Stephen. I read it to you. I think some other time, but here we go. It's called The Mother of Us All. The mother of us all prays to free us from our image of perfection, to which so much suffering clings. When in the shadowy mind we imagine ourselves imperfectly, praying to be freed by enlightenment, she refines our prayers. Putting her arms around us, she bids us rest our head on her shoulder, whispering, "Don't you know, with all your fear and anger, all you are fit for is love." So I think I want to pause there and go for my bows and appreciation to Stephen. And express my love. And say thank you.